Sir Reginald, what were your reactions when war was declared in August 1914?
Kathy, where were we in 1914?
I was at Ascot still.
You were still at Ascot?
Yes. And let me just think a minute. I think I remember you'd had a holiday. Wasn't Uncle Gerald and Aunt Laura? Had they given you a holiday?
Yes.
Did you come back almost on the last boat from...
That's right. Oh, Sweden. Yes, I remember now. Yes. I had a very good uncle who was very much a sportsman, you know, and I was the only nephew he had who was... keen on shooting and so on. And he was terribly good. And I remember I'd been on a... We had a wonderful fishing expedition to Norway, wasn't it?
Norway or Sweden, which was it?
Yes, one or the other, because we landed in Sweden afterwards and crossed to... And came home just before the war broke out. It was the last ship that left Norway for the 1418 war. And I just got back in time. And, well, that's not interesting to anybody except to try and reminisce.
You were on leave then from the army?
I was on leave from the Home Office, yes.
You were not actually serving in the army as a regular at that time?
Oh, well, I was still a regular, pretty much, yes. And the thing was that at the Home Office, and I expect they still have, they had a small department called the Explosives Department. There was a chief inspector, so-called, and three inspectors. And we had the whole country to look after in my day. And we were given an area, and you could use it your own way, you see, and as long as you inspected all the civilian magazines and factories, like Nobel's factory at RDR and all this, these sort of things, and Kurtzen Howe and the Cotton Powder Company and other things, doing civilian explosives for blasting and demolitions and all that sort of thing. A very interesting job, and I was very fortunate as a junior, so I was a junior department. And, well, actually, the officer who was my company officer when I was a cadet at the shop at Royal Military Academy, you see, called Cunningham, he was there. And when they had a vacancy at the Home Office for another inspector, they say he must be at least 11 years younger than the youngest inspector here, because they were all about the same age and they saw that they'd all be leaving together. So they must have somebody to succeed. And so I was lucky enough to be there and lived to succeed. And I was then, afterwards, about over 10 years, Chief Inspector of Explosives, which was rather nice. Well, it was a very good appointment.
Did you inspect the explosives that were being made, or did you inspect the conditions of the factory?
Oh, no, both. We were at the factories and magazines and stores and registered premises, as they were called, where you were allowed to keep certain small quantities under certain conditions. And there were only four of us to do the whole of, only three of us, really, because there was a chief inspector who went anywhere and re-inspected what you'd been inspecting, and you never knew where he was going. He closed his own. We were all allotted a huge part of the country, many counties in each one, and it was not a very good job for wives, because husbands were away most of their time. They had to, in order to get round all the factories and magazines to do with explosives, the stalls where they kept the firework places where they kept for the 5th of November and all this kind of thing. It was an extremely interesting job. And then you had to chair the inquiries into accidents, fatal or serious otherwise ones. And it was a very much sought after job. Well, the officer who used to look after me when I was a cadet at the shop, Cunningham by name, when there was a vacancy, he remembered that I was under him, because he'd got one of these jobs after. When there was a vacancy, they were looking for somebody who was qualified and yet was 11 years younger than any of them, you see. And so he hit on me. And he liked me as a cadet, evidently, because I hadn't known him out there. And he thought I'd be, from what his knowledge of me was when I was under him in the village, he wrote to me and asked me if I'd like to come. So that was my career after that.
And you were, when you took up that appointment, in the Royal Garrison Artillery.
I had been, yes. No, because I had to go from the field. When you were a cadet and you were going into the artillery, you had to say what you wanted to do for the mounted artillery. Well, the mounted was pretty expensive, and you had to have an allowance for your father and all that sort of thing. And so when I passed out, I was a runner-up for the riding prize, you know, keen on this sort of thing. And so when I said, they said, now what do you want, the garrison or the field? And I said, I'd much prefer the field, but I could never afford it. But on that, they gave me the field. When my father cabled from Ceylon to say, take the field, yes, you're off. And anyhow, I went into the field, but I could only stick it for expenses for a year, and I had to go into the dismounted branch. And from there I went, retired from the artillery and went to the Home Office. And as a junior, and I went temporarily, Kathleen, Home
About
Office
1911,
in the first,
wasn't it? Pardon?
Yes, that's right, 1911. Right up to the time of the First World War.
Why was the field artillery so much more expensive than the Royal Garrison Artillery?
For one thing, the Garrison Artillery got a little more pay, only about 4 shillings a day or something like that, but it meant a lot of money for a... So when your salary was, I don't know what, maybe 300 a year or something like that. It was pretty small.
And in the field artillery, you had to own your own horse and so on, did you?
No, in the horse artillery, you were expected to have your own horse as well. But in the field artillery, you could, if you liked, have a private horse kept at government expense doing the work of an artillery horse, a rider in it. And,
it meant your house being looked after. You had to pay out for that.
Well, you had to pay on. You had to have a groom who was a gunner, and but or drivers they called them, and but you had to pay him over and above his regimental pay. There was a scale laid down for it. It was all beautifully arranged, and so I was commissioned into the field artillery and loved it. But we were given a year to decide what we go into permanently. And although my father told me to carry on with the field, he was absolutely going for the bankruptcy court, and I thought the Artist Salon, because they had a very bad time and a failure of crops and things like that. And I said, I can't possibly do this. And was able to, we, in those days, we were able to sell out. I sold out to, I went to Cox and Co., you know, and said, I want to do this. And it was allowed by the authority. And I said, but I won't go unless I get, I've forgotten what it was, 400 or 500 pounds. See if I could pay all my debts or not, because I hadn't paid my uniform expenses for joining in. And so I sold out and was very rich for a short time. And had poor relations, that's kind, which I was very glad to be able to do something for. And as well as carry on. But that's by the way.
This was before the Boer War or after it?
That was before the Boer War. Mm-hmm. And then, because if the Boer War, if I'd been ordered out to the Boer War, I wouldn't have exchanged. I'd have had enough extra pay to do it.
Yes. There was a role, the garrison artillery fulfilled a role during the Boer War, did it?
Oh, yes, it was still going. Yes.
In South Africa, you went out to South Africa with the garrison artillery.
I went out to South Africa. Now, what happened? How did I go to the Boer War? Kathy knew it, that's before I knew you, I think, wasn't it?
It would have been Bowers, Rob, who said that there were very few officers left at home. Nearly all the people
was
had
it.
Been sent out. And then finally you were called on.
Yes, I remember I was the artillery general. And it said that I was the only, I think I was the only gunner officer left in Woolwich or something of that kind. You know, everybody was away, and I was a junior of the whole lot, and I found myself in command. And I've got a photograph of myself there, as the head of a brigade of artillery. You see, I used to carry on and take them out for exercise on Woolwich Common and various other places. And route marches and so on, keeping everything going. And
and then you went to South Africa. You were sent sent there, and you were in charge of a blockhouse.
Yes. I've got a picture of it there in that album of the blockhouse.
Was this a particularly lonely sort of post?
In South Africa.
Yes, did you find it?
Well, now, what happened in South Africa? You know, Kitchener, who was afterwards drowned, Kitchener was Lord Roberts's chief staff officer. And Bob's great favourite, and he was Commander-in-Chief when I joined, and actually gave me my one of my war medals, and he was a most lovable character,
and How was that? Can you remember any incidents that would illustrate that?
Of Lord Robert.
Yes, of his character.
Was it a relative of his?
Well,
am I wrong in saying that?
Do you remember Mrs. Barter by name?
Well, I remember you speaking of somebody.
Well, she was a niece of Lord Robert.
Yes.
And
she took a photograph.
She became a great friend of mine when I was a cadet officer at Woolwich. It's one of the jobs I had. I've forgotten how I got it, but anyhow, I suppose it must have been a bit of selection. And I had nothing to distinguish. A good all-round cadet, I suppose. Do you know what I mean? And I was very fortunate in jobs I got and so on. And one was as cadet officer at the Royal Military Academy. And and they wanted so many officers that they had to get a lot more cadets, and there was no room for them. This is towards the end of my, as I was just giving up